Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show from the Labatt Blue Studio. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Bleed blue and white, drink blue and light. And don't forget to try the new Labatt Blue Light Seltzer Variety Pack, available at retailers throughout Pennsylvania.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number two. I'm Jim Galante along with Greg Pickle, and we're going to pick up our conversation with Greg. I like the terminology you use, our discussion of Practice 12, which happened last Saturday. You were there, could actually give us information from being there live. And Greg, one of the things I promised we would get to the other side of the ball, get to the defensive side, and specifically I wanted to start at cornerback. All spring long, we've been hearing about Kalen King. I think James Franklin used the quote, he's the most mature freshman, most ready freshman he could recall. And on Saturday, he really lent credibility to James Franklin's words with two interceptions. You were there. Did he look as good as all the reports say he did?
Yeah, man, I think James Franklin said it best, that some guys love the ball and some guys the ball loves them. And when you marry those two together, you have a chance to be a turnover machine. And it sounds like Kalen King is a turnover machine. The hype is real, for sure. There's no doubt about that. He is a guy who should have no problem competing for a very big rotation role, if not a starting job, and playing right away for the Lions in 2021. I was hesitant, Jim, going into this to get too far over the skis, so to speak, about what Kalen King could do this year, because it just felt like the expectations were through the roof. I mean, this is a guy who just got to campus in January, and he was a highly regarded recruit, but it's not like he was a five-star number one of this, you know, top five player in the country. I mean, he received the kind of hype so far this spring that you might have expected Micah Parsons or Justin Shorter to get during their first 3 or 4 months on campus. So, you know, I was a little bit worried that maybe, you know, there was a big reason why so many guys were pointing him out as the standout. Maybe they had heard, you know, maybe it was kind of becoming confirmation bias a little bit. Once one guy said it, one coach said it, everyone said it. But no, it's the real deal. This is a guy who, you know, again, looks to be really in a position to thrive and really in a position to help Penn State in the secondary this year. And, you know, again, I think James Franklin said that he thought the secondary could be good, and it seems like it could be even better than what he thought. And I'm hard to argue with. I mean, safety is still a bit of a question mark, Jim, but the corner room looks to be in great shape.
It seems to me, and I'm making a straight line from the fact that Kalen King seems to be the real deal at cornerback, ready to step up and play, to Marquise Wilson making the shift from defense to offense. But it also leads to the question we've been debating, you know, since the end of last season. There's question marks at safety yet. Is the cornerback room still so crowded that we may see someone make the move from cornerback to safety yet?
Yeah, I would assume so. I mean, I think we've talked earlier in the year that the guy with the build that makes the most sense would be Keaton Ellis. So I guess that'll be something worth watching here moving forward as spring practice wraps up. I don't necessarily, you know, think that I think they'll move somebody. It doesn't necessarily have to be Keaton Ellis, but, you know, I do look at what that corners room is made up of right now. And I also think about the transfer portal and say to myself, you know what? It's not going to be the worst thing in the world if a corner contributes at receiver this year. It's not going to be the worst thing in the world if a corner moves back to safety this year, because the more, you know, you're happy with your numbers now, but guess what? If guys aren't happy with their role and feel like they can't contribute to the cause, they might look to move on and go somewhere where it's a little less crowded. So if you can move guys around, knowing that you have those numbers in your back pocket if you ever need to move them back because of injuries or anything else, then you might as well do it, and you might as well let your guys who you think are going to be your top four, top five, top six, whatever, you know, be the ones who spend the most time focused on that position. And then if you want to try some other things, like moving a corner to receiver or like moving a corner to safety, do it. So I do expect James Franklin and the staff will make some changes or do some experimenting in that regard.
You make a great point. For depth purposes, you now have one guy in Marquise Wilson providing depth at both wide receiver and at cornerback. It's a nice thing to have. Greg, going into this season, one of the big question marks was that defensive line you know, losing Shaka Toney and Jason Owe and transfers on the inside. Big questions on defensive line, and I know you have some thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I look at, you know, what we thought the defensive line could be and what it looks like now. I mean, don't get me wrong, Jim. There's still light on numbers there, and that's going to be a problem going into the summer and throughout the fall. I mean, you know, Adisa Isaac, I don't think we saw much or any of him on Saturday, but I'm sure he'll be fine for when the season gets here. Obviously, Arnold Ebiketie's kind of been talked about a lot this spring. He looks good. He has a great burst off the edge. I really think he's a guy that will impact things in a positive way for Penn State this fall. You know, inside, P.J. Mustipher looks great. Hakeem Beamon looks skinny, which I think is going to make him an interesting sort of speed-rushing defensive tackle, if you will. And, you know, we'll see him out there a lot. Devon Ellis, Fred Hansard. I mean, and Nick Tarburton, I thought, looked pretty good, too. It's just a matter of whether he can stay healthy now playing defensive end. So they have some guys there. The transfer situation certainly improves it. But much like I didn't want to get too far down the rabbit hole in a negative way with Sean Clifford, I don't want to get too far down that same rabbit hole in a positive way with the defensive line. I did like some of what I saw, but some of it was against not the starting group of offensive linemen, and some of it was, you know, I don't know if the offensive line, you know, sometimes the plays the offense ran or the decisions a player made the defensive line look really good. Now, on one hand, you have to make the plays. On the other hand, some things were kind of put right in their lap. So we'll see. It might be a step in the right direction there. You know, ultimately, I think that if Ebiketie and Isaac and Tarburton can really be more statistically productive than the guys were last year. I thought the guys last year were pretty good in non-stat ways, but it didn't show up on the stat sheet a lot of times, and Penn State needs it to. So, you know, starting with Wisconsin, they're going to have to push some guys around. They're going to have to be able to get into the backfield, and they're going to have to, you know, make sure they funnel things into the linebackers and keep guys from getting outside. So, you know, they'll get a good stiff test of what it's going to take to do that at Wisconsin in the opener, and we'll know more about what they're going to look like then.
Let's switch back to the offense because I want to talk about Mike Yurcich and his new offense. In watching this scrimmage, what elements of the Mike Yurcich offense did you see? What was different from what we saw last year or the year before?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest change, obviously, is, you know, we hear all this tempo. It's going to be fast, And we know Mike Yurcich was fast everywhere he's been, but I was at least a little bit curious to actually see if it was true. And James Franklin has said this. Remember the quote that kind of caught everyone's eyes, Jim, when he said something about, you know, we've interviewed guys in the past who said they were tempo guys and they really weren't tempo guys. And a lot of people assumed he was talking about Kirk Ciarrocca, but and I don't know if we've discussed this before, but to me, it very well may have been Joe Moorhead he was talking about. Joe Moorhead, you know, people thought his offense was going to be fast, and while they would get to the line quickly, Jim, how often would they kind of waste that speed looking over to the sideline, changing the play, checking with me again, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, they weren't really as fast as what people thought they could have been because they were doing all that stuff at the line of scrimmage. Whereas with this, it's pretty clear that the plan is, hey, here's what we're going to do in any number of situations we find ourselves in. They're going to get to the line of scrimmage. They're going to snap the ball. They're going to go. They're not going to let the other team substitute. They're not going to let the other team catch their breath. And as Mike Yurcich said, following practice number 12, it does tire your own guys out. And if you go three and out, it causes problems for your defense. But the hope is that by slowing down the defense's communication, making them tired faster and not allowing them to substitute, that you end up in situations where you have some kind of advantage pre-snap. So if you're out there and it's third and eight and they bring in a sub package of defensive backs and you get a first down, you want to get to the line quickly and try and run into that because they don't have, probably in most cases, they're not going to have a linebacker on the field, and they may have went smaller at defensive along the defensive line for more of a pass rush. So, you know, you can create advantages for yourself, and that's what they're going to look to do. So, you know, that's the thing that kind of jumped out to me. Is it what we expected it to look like, Jim? It certainly did.
And the example you gave, Greg, where a third down play where the defense may be in some kind of nickel formation, you get the first down. Is it not also the situation where if you on offense don't substitute, they don't have to give the defense time to substitute?
That's correct, yes. So If you don't take guys off the field, that's right. You don't have to stop and wait. You know, you'll see when they sub guys in that the line or the umpire will come in between the quarterback and the center and make them wait until the defense has had a chance to change players. If you don't do that, obviously they don't get the chance to do that. And that's kind of the idea behind the tempo. And that's what I think was frustrating at times about what Penn State did in the past. You know, it was, you know, they did a good job of getting up to the line of scrimmage, but then they might change a running back, they might change receivers, and it's like, well, you just wasted that opportunity that you created for yourself because now you're forced to slow down and wait. So, yeah, I think that's what James Franklin was hinting at when he made those comments earlier in the year, and you can see what he means. So, yeah, we also saw a couple under center snaps. Sean Clifford fumbled the first one. The rest of it was, I think, went off without a hitch for the most part. It was certainly weird to see. Obviously, we have not seen that in quite some time. But we did not see any quarterback sneaks from under center. But if they're practicing snapping the ball from under center, I think that could be in the cards this year. So I know a lot of people have asked us to ask the coaches why there's not more of that. And the standard answer has always been that they weren't going to do something that they do not practice, but if they are now practicing that, Jim, that could open up a part of a playbook that Penn State has not used in a number of years.
So are you saying they did that multiple times? I read, you know, the first time they did it, they muffed the snap, but you're saying they did it multiple times. And also, what are the advantages of being under center beyond just the quarterback sneak?
Yeah, I mean, the big ones obviously are you are eliminating your, you know, you can, your running back can be coming forward when he gets the handoff, not standing beside you pretty much at a standstill, and then starting 4 yards behind the line of scrimmage or 3 yards or 5 yards, however deep you line up. So that's obviously the biggest advantage. And then, you know, again, the sneak, I think, is the one thing that we've heard about from Penn State fans the most, Jim, is that they don't understand 3rd and 1, 3rd and 2, why they don't just get up behind the center, snap the ball, and let the guys up front do the dirty work and let Sean Clifford or whoever fall forward for a first down. So it looks like Mike Yurcich wants that to be a part of the playbook. It's not going to be a big part of the playbook. They're going to go out of shotgun 98 or 99% of the time. But unlike past coordinators, it does look like Mike Yurcich will make that an option for his team. It doesn't mean they'll do it in every short yard situation. It doesn't mean they'll do it every game. But I think fans will be comforted knowing that it's at least an option, at least something the team is practicing, and at least something it could pull out of its playbook if it needs it in a certain particular situation or at a certain time of the game. Plus, it mixes things up for the defense, too. They can get confused. They can get lost. They can miss where guys are. So just a nice wrinkle to have at your disposal.
It was interesting that they never had time to practice it previously. But this year, as they're putting in a new offense, they do have time to practice under center. All right, that is it for quarter number two. Stick around. In quarter number three, we're going to ask Greg.
In a world of over 100 hard seltzers swimming in a sea of sameness and mediocrity, a hero emerges. Introducing Seagram's Hard Seltzer, the greatest of all time. So go ahead, awaken your taste buds and bring the thrill back to bubbles with fruit-infused flavor combinations that are refreshingly new and deliciously different. Seagram's Hard Seltzer. Kick it with the goat.
Flavored malt beverages. Enjoy responsibly. The Seagram Beverage Company, Rochester, New York.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.